A lady by the name of, and I'll be back at the table, be glad to just fellowship with you if you'd like to stop back there before I leave here tonight. A lady by the name of Deborah Brown told this story in a national magazine. She said, "I was balancing a bag of groceries in one arm. I pushed the kitchen door open. Meredith, my 11-year-old, followed me, talking a mile a minute. Mom," she said, "as I set everything down, you're not listening." "I am listening," I said, putting my brain on mental rewind. Anybody ever do that? You were telling me about your math test tomorrow. Before that, you were saying you did not like PE. She sighed dramatically, then continued speaking to the back of my head. I put the groceries away, put the water on for spaghetti, checked my email, all the while trying to keep up with my daughter's monologue. I was saying, that's nice. 2 hours later, my husband Alan's car keys clanked into the tray by the back door, and he began giving me the full rundown of the day's events at his real estate office. I put some more spaghetti and sauce on for his dinner, heated the peas in the microwave, sliced some bread. He said, "I got the tickets for the game." "Really?" I mumbled while I was thinking, "Where is Meredith? Has she finished her homework? It's getting late. She needs to get ready for bed soon." By the time I'd cleaned up in the kitchen, Alan was in the family room, sitting in his easy chair across from Meredith. He said, "How was PE today, honey?" "Fine." Her eyes never left her book. "Did you play volleyball or did you run?" She turned the page. "Answer me, sweetie." She finally looked up and said, "Answer what?" My husband sighed, picked up his paper. "You're just like your mother," he grumbled. "You never listen." I walked in and said, "What are you talking about?" His face flushed. He said, "It's true. When I'm talking, you're always doing other things. Cooking, answering your email, clearing the table. You say, but you don't hear half of what I say. Now our daughter's doing it. Alan, doing two things is that at once is the only way I can get anything done around here. Just because I'm not looking at you doesn't mean I don't hear you. Well, half the time you're tuning me out. Well, we'll talk about it later." But we didn't. We both went to bed upset. Why didn't my husband get it? I'm a busy person. Beside my job at the bank, I had to keep the house running, cook the meals, make sure our daughter had her homework done. I didn't have time to just listen. A few weeks later, Alan and I attended a weekend seminar on internet businesses. Neither of us had brought the listening issue up, but there was tension hanging in the air. My prayers felt futile as I tried to talk to God about it, squeezed in between a million other things. So I was more than a little surprised when Saturday's speaker at the seminar, a communications expert, introduced his topic for the morning, which was effective listening. He began by saying, "I'd like everyone here to try a simple exercise. Would you please divide up in pairs?" And the speaker pointed right at my husband and me and said, "We will start right here." And I'll share more of that story later. Now, I don't know about you, but I love to read biographies, and I love autobiographies where somebody writes about their own life. If I were to ask you, where do you find the most biographical information about the Apostle Paul? If you know your New Testament, I think you would probably say the book of Acts. If I were to ask you, where do you find the most autobiographical information where Paul wrote about himself? If you know your New Testament, I think you might say the letter of 2 Corinthians. Many years ago, I was a much younger preacher. I promised you that was around 1984, 1985. I preached all the way through the letter that Paul wrote, the letter of 2 Corinthians. And you know, there's a lot of truth in 2 Corinthians, but even more than 30 years later now, there was one passage that really stood out in my mind. It is the passage where Paul really revealed his heart. It is a crying out passage. It is a cry from his heart. Now, in most all of Paul's letters, he told us something about himself, but 2 Corinthians is by far the most personal of them all. We have no outward picture of the Apostle Paul, but 2 Corinthians is better. It is an inward picture of the Apostle Paul. I don't know whether I'd wanted to look like Paul looked on the outside, but I sure would like to have looked like Paul looked on the inside. Everybody say amen right there, all right? And we all probably ought to feel that way. I've got the verses on the screen. 2 Corinthians chapter 6, beginning with verse 11. Read it off the screen out loud, real clearly, everybody all together. Would you please? O ye Corinthians, our mouth is open unto you. Our heart is enlarged. Keep reading. Ye are not straitened in us, but ye are straitened in your own bowels. Here's what he's saying there. The restriction in the communication between you and me, Paul says, is not from my side. It is coming from your side. It's coming from inside you. Then he continues, read it please. Now for a recompense in the same, I speak as unto my children, be ye also enlarged. Notice that he said, our mouth is open, our heart is enlarged. And then he says, be ye also enlarged. I want to speak for just a little while tonight on the subject, don't stop communicating. Two symbols Paul used in this passage, first of all, is the open mouth, and secondly, is the enlarged heart. I want you to get a picture of both of them in your mind. The open mouth is a symbol of full, open, real, honest communication. And the enlarged heart is a picture of a man who loves those who won't love him back like they should. It is a picture of a man who loves those who attack and criticize him. It is a picture of a man who keeps a reservoir of forgiveness available to draw from the very moment that it is needed. Now, I'm saying tonight, don't stop communicating. And really, I have one key point that I want to try to get across to you as much as I can. Read it off the screen with me. Everybody, would you please? Don't stop communicating with family members who reject you or criticize you or have a bad spirit towards you. Maybe they have a bad attitude toward you. Maybe they reject your beliefs. Maybe they reject your standards. Maybe they reject both of them. It may be a son. It may be a daughter-in-law. It may be a daughter. It may be a son-in-law, it may be a dad, it may be a mom, it may be a mother-in-law or a father-in-law, it may be grandparents. And you know what? Sometimes we say foolish things like, sticks and stones may break my bones, but words will never hurt me. But I want to tell you, you say anything you want to. The truth is this, rejection hurts. And when somebody rejects you, especially if it is a family member like one of those I just mentioned, it hurts. Now, Paul in another passage here in 2 Corinthians chapter 11 verse 2 said, really to the church at Corinth, I feel like a daddy or a father towards you. You know what? There are some very unlovely family members in this world, but they need somebody to love them as well. There are some very unlovely people in this world, but they need somebody to love them as well. There are some very unlovely people in the church, but they need somebody to love them too. No, it's not that person that you think I'm talking about. It's somebody else, all right? How easy it is for some people to fight. How difficult it is for some people to communicate, and sometimes it actually gets humorous. True story. Mishawaka, Indiana, convenience store, two men walked in ready to rob the convenience store. One of them hands a note to the clerk. She reads the note. She looks up at the guy and says, I don't understand what it is you're wanting me to do. And the second guy standing here looks at the first guy standing there and says, I told you that note didn't make a lick of sense. I told you you needed to rewrite that. I told you she wouldn't even understand what we were wanting to do. Here we are trying to rob the store. She don't even get it. And they stood there and argued and finally just turned around and walked out and never got the job done. Now, I want to draw a picture for you of this text, the way I see it in my mind. All right, there it is again. Read it out loud again, would you please? Oh, ye Corinthians, our mouth is open unto you. Our heart is enlarged. Now, you know, almost everybody has a few people in their heart. And you know what happens sometime? Some of those people will start fighting. Anybody ever had anybody you loved who started fighting with you? Fighting or misbehaving or criticizing or attacking you. What is the normal human reaction? The normal human reaction is this. You know what? I can live my life fine without you. Thank you very much. And our normal reaction is to restrict our heart and squeeze those people out. I don't have to put up with this. I've got other things to do in my life. My life is not just to revolve around one person, and I thank you very much, but I can live without you. What did Paul do? He did the very opposite. He enlarged his heart. Think about this for just a minute. Would you please? Pastor, stand up here for a second, all right? Now, if Pastor and I are just standing here carrying on a normal conversation, it doesn't take a lot of room for us to stand here. But if we decide to fight and we really get with it, I can see the look in his eyes. He's about ready to go and I'm in danger. And you know what? That would take a lot more room. It could take, and you know what? Thank you, preacher. If you keep somebody in your heart who is wanting to fight with you, the only way you can do it is if you enlarge your heart and make it big enough where you can keep them in your heart even though the fighting is going on. It takes more room for two people to fight than it does for two people to stand still. But if you enlarge your heart, make it big enough where you can include that person who is wanting to fight with you, when you get done fighting, your heart will be bigger and there'll be more room for more people. Oh, ye Corinthians, our mouth is open unto you. Our heart is enlarged. Now, I want to get y'all to do something, okay? I need to get everybody involved. Now, I'm going to tell you up front, you're not going to want to do this, and I'm just going to plead with you, do it anyway, all right? Here's what I want you to do. We're going to act this out. Here it is. I need everybody to do this with me. Here's the open mouth. Everybody go like this, huh? And the enlarged heart. Go like this, all right? The open mouth. Come on, everybody, come on. And the enlarged, y'all look ridiculous. The open mouth, and thank you very much. You did great. I appreciate it. Now, the open mouth and the enlarged heart, that's what Paul is talking about. Those are symbols of full, open, honest communication, even with people that it's very difficult to communicate with. The heart of Jesus was big enough to take in the whole world. You remember how on the cross he said, Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do. And when Jesus comes into your heart, he wants to make your heart like his heart. Isn't it amazing how small some people's heart is in comparison to what it could be and it should be? But can I tell you something? Read this off the screen, everybody. Would you please? Your joy is determined by the size of your heart. Because joy, what is joy? Anyway, notice what Paul said in 2 Corinthians chapter 2, verse 3, when he said, at the end of that verse, my joy is the joy of you all. Joy is not just a single, personal, individual thing. No, joy is primarily a corporate thing that involves other people. Sure, I can have some joy by myself, but I'm going to have more joy if I'm fellowshipping with you, Pastor. And if you add my wife and your wife in that, then we just keep multiplying the joy. And the more people there are, the more joy there can be. Now listen to this statement. The breadth and extent of your ministry, and everybody should be a minister, the breadth and extent of your ministry is determined by the size of your heart. How big is your heart? Is your heart big enough to take in other people, people who are difficult people? 2 Corinthians 5:18, God hath reconciled us to himself by Jesus Christ and has given to us the ministry of reconciliation. If you're going to reconcile people to one another who are estranged, you have to have both. You have to have God and others in your heart if you're going to be able to reconcile them to one another. When you're dealing with two people at odds with one another, you have to have both of them in your heart. Many people, even Christians, unwittingly have the ministry of alienation instead of the ministry of reconciliation because their heart is not big enough to include both sides of a dispute. A father and son are fighting. Who can help? Somebody, perhaps the mother, who has room for them both in her heart. I heard years ago, I heard a story that I think occurred probably in the late 1800s of how a father, son, mother in the same home, and the father and son got into an argument, and then it escalated. Until the father said, if you feel that way, you don't have to stay in this house. And the son said, you know what? I don't think I want to stay in this house. And the father said, why don't you just leave? And the son said, if I leave, I don't ever come back again. And the father said, that's fine with me. Just never come back. Just get out of my house. It's my house. Leave. And the mother's standing there crying. And the boy left. And years went by. And the mother talks to the father and says, why don't you apologize to him? And every once in a while, she will write a letter to the son, and the son will write back to her, and the father will have nothing to do. And finally, one day, the mother gets sick, and it looks like she is going to die. She's lying in the bed, and she says to her husband, honey, I have one wish before I die. I want to see my son. Please, would you contact our son? Have him come. The dad sends a letter. Your mother's dying. If you want to see her, you better come. And the son comes and walks in to the room where she's dying. And the son and the father don't even look at each other. The son walks around on the other side of the bed. And the mother's lying in the bed and the husband is here. And the son is here and they're both looking down at her and neither one of them will look at the other one. And she looks up at her husband and says, you know, why don't you tell him you're sorry? She looks up at the son and says, tell your dad you're sorry, son. You know what? And she says, am I going to die like this? Am I going to die with y'all not even talking to each other? And then she had an idea. She took her husband's hand and took her son's hand and starts pulling them in like this. And they both pulled back. And she's laying there. She's dying. She has almost no strength. And she says, you know I'm so weak. You know I cannot fight you. Don't fight me. Don't fight me. Don't fight me. This is my life's dying wish. And as she lays there dying, she pulls the father's hand and the son's hand. And she lays them here and she looks at both of them and says, I don't care who apologizes to who for what. Would somebody please say you're sorry? Would somebody please be reconciled before I died? And in her death, she did what she could not do in her life because she kept both of them in her heart. And they were reconciled. A husband and wife are fighting. Who can help? Somebody. Maybe they're in-laws. If they have them both in their hearts, that's why when you have a son or a daughter who gets married, that daughter, I've got four daughters, they're all married. I have 14 grandchildren, three great-grandchildren now. And you know what? My daughter's married. My sons-in-law, they are not just sons-in-law to me. They are sons to me. Did you hear that? And as best I can, I have for many years now, and you're welcome to ask my kids, I try not to take one of them's side against the other one. If they have problems, I tell them, you work those problems out. I am pulling for both of you. And you don't ever walk away from each other. Now, notice the command, because it's a command to you and me today. Oh, you Corinthians, our mouth is open to you. Our heart is enlarged. Be ye also enlarged. Paul says, my heart is big enough to take you in. Why isn't your heart big enough to take me in? How does a church grow larger anyway? Brother Rogers, I was pastor for 36 and a half years. You've been pastor how many years? 28 years. All right. And you know what? We both studied church growth. I promise you. We both studied church growth. And you know what? There's all kinds of formulas, all kinds of things that people talk about for church growth, but you know, it can almost be boiled down to what I'm fixing to tell you right here. Listen to this. How does a church grow larger? Here it is. Enough people let their hearts grow big enough to take in more and more people. If you can get everybody here to let your heart be big enough where next Sunday when somebody who looks strange to you comes walking in here and you say, you know what? There's room in my heart for that person. I don't know what their background is. I don't know what their problem is, because I tell you, people who come into your church are almost always people with a past. They're people with failures. They're people with difficulties. They are people with warts and wants. Everybody's got, almost everybody I know of has something in their past they wish was not there. And you know what? They need somebody big enough. Have you ever thought about when a visitor comes in next Sunday, maybe saying to them, hey, could we take you out for lunch? Could you come to our house for lunch? And even if they don't go, it says to them, this church has a heart that is big enough to include me, to fellowship with me, to reach out with me. And they don't care what my past is. They still care enough to reach out to me. What are the symbols? Read it, please. Everybody, the open mouth and the enlarged heart. One of the most important characteristics of a man or a woman of God full of true love is that when they run into problems with somebody, they don't walk away and cut off communication. That's what people do. And you know what? I've seen people post it on Facebook. I'm walking away from this relationship. It's a toxic relationship. And somebody will like what you put on there. They'll check mark you and they say, yeah, I agree with you. You know what? You're free now. You're better off. But instead, the person with the open mouth and the enlarged heart, they try to communicate even more. Did you know that's the whole reason for this book that we call 2 Corinthians? On his second missionary journey, Paul had spent a year and a half in Acts chapter 18 establishing the church at Corinth. He won Jews and Greeks and Gentiles to Christ, but no sooner does he leave there than they get divided four different ways. Some of them said, I'm of Paul. Some have said, I'm of Apollos. Some of Cephas. Some said, I'm of Christ. False teachers come in there, miss. Terrible immorality surfaces. Does Paul give up on them? No. He writes the letter that we call 1 Corinthians. Now, Paul was pretty tough on those people in that letter. Did it solve their problems? Yes and no. Some of the things Paul wrote them about, they listened to, but some people just got mad at Paul. They attacked him. They even falsely accused him. What does Paul do? Does he say, you know what? I'm done with you. I've had enough of this. I mean, they're attacking the man who started their church. So is he completely done with them? Oh, absolutely not. You know, I wondered when I got to this point. Here is the church that attacked the Apostle Paul. And I'm going to show you that in just a second. I'm going to show you all the attacks they made upon him. And you know what he did? He just kept communicating with them. And I wondered, how much did Paul communicate with them in comparison to all the other churches that he wrote to? Chapters are different lengths in a typical Bible, but you have about the same amount of space on a page in a Bible, you know? Well, I wondered, how much did Paul write? Well, he wrote the church at Rome, 14 pages. The church at Galatia, he wrote 5 pages. The church at Ephesus, he wrote 5 pages. The church at Philippi, he wrote 3.5 pages. Colossae, 3 pages. Thessalonica, 5 pages. Hold on to your seat. 22 pages Paul wrote to the church at Corinth. More! He wrote more to Corinth than he wrote to Galatia, Ephesus, Philippi, Colossae, and Thessalonica all combined. And that was the church. That was the church that caused him the most problems and attacked him the most. Now, I talked about attacks here, and I can take a long time, but I'm not going to do this. But let me show you some of the attacks they made on Paul, all right? You can see it when you read 2 Corinthians. His letters are weighty and powerful, they said, but his bodily presence is weak and his speech is contemptible. Chapter 10, verse 10. In other words, they said, Paul is a lousy preacher. Paul gave a bold answer. Though I be rude in speech, yet not in knowledge. He said, I may be a poor speaker, at least I know what I'm talking about. What good is eloquent ignorance anyway? He was criticized more after his first letter than he was before. Did you notice what they said about him? In chapter 1, verse 17 and 18, they attacked him. They said, He uses likeness. He purposes according to the flesh instead of the spirit. He says, yes, he's, yay, he's gonna do something. No. And he doesn't keep his word. He's not serious. He's not spiritual. He's fickle. He's double-tongued. You can't count on his word. What happened was he had promised, he had said he was coming back to see them again, and then he didn't show up. And Paul wrote them and said, there was a reason why I did not show up. I was pressed beyond measure. It was almost like my life itself was in danger. And he didn't have the ability to text them or email them and tell them that he couldn't get there. There was no telephones around. They even questioned his right to come and preach to them again. And they said, there's the verse, we were pressed out of measure, we despaired even of life. They questioned his right to come and preach. They said, maybe he needs letters of recommendation. And he said, you are our letter written in our heart. In chapter 5, they said he was proud and boastful, maybe even a little crazy beside ourselves. In chapter 11, they said he could not be a man of God, because he wouldn't take any support while he was there. Have I committed an offense because I preached to you the gospel of God freely? And then in chapter 12, they accused him of being crafty and deceitful, that though he said he didn't take any money while he was there, surely he figured out some way to do it that they didn't know about. Whoa. So, you're attacked if you took support. You're attacked if you didn't take support. Pray tell, what does a guy do? Now, if this was somebody you were dealing with, what would your response be? They have really gone after him. If you'd written a letter to help somebody, found out after you wrote it, they had made all these accusations against you, would you be saying, I'm done with them? Paul looked at the positive side. Before there were four divisions in the church, now there are only two. Those for Paul, those against Paul. We're making ground. Oh, ye Corinthians, our mouth is open unto you. Our heart is enlarged. The solution, listen to me, the solution to any problem you have with anybody is communication. I saw all the liberal media attacking our president for trying to talk to Kim Jong-un. And you know what? They're wrong. There is no chance of solving our problems with North Korea if those two men can't talk. There has to be talk. I don't care whether he's a liberal. When Obama, I didn't care for most of Obama's policies, but when Obama was president, you remember, he tried to communicate with Iran, and he was criticized for that. And I said to people I was talking to, I said, you know what? I don't like his policies. And I don't like what he did in relation to Iran, but the truth was, it was at least good. He was trying to talk to him. If nations can't talk, you can't avoid war. And if you can't get people to talk, they can't avoid war either. It doesn't matter. The biggest problem on the biggest scale, the smallest problem on the smallest scale, the solution to problems is communication. Divisions come, sometimes divisions stay because someone no longer loves enough to communicate. Divorce often comes as a result of somebody no longer caring or loving enough to continue to communicate. Now, Pastor, if you listen to all my sermons, you'll find out I'm against divorce and remarriage. I am not against divorced and remarried people. And you know what? I've seen and preached about the consequences on a couple and on their children, but those consequences are not fixed and certain and unchangeable and unstoppable. Many children of divorced parents have built wonderful, strong, solid marriages because how? They never give up when they have problems. They never shut the other person out. They continue to communicate. Communicate. You don't stop communicating. Now, I'm not at the end of my message yet, but you remember my opening story. You remember they're at this they're at this seminar, and the leader of the seminar is a communications expert, and he's speaking on effective listening. And he says, "Would you please divide up in pairs?" Then he pointed right at her and her husband and said, "We will start right here, and I want one of you to tell your partner about something that's been bothering you. The other person is to remain completely silent. Then we'll repeat the exercise the other way around." My husband shrugged, and I looked at him and I said, "You first." And the speaker started his stopwatch. And my husband said, "I've been worried about Meredith. She's in a different school with new friends. I know she has to take PE every day. She doesn't like it. I keep trying to talk to her about it, but I'm not reaching her." He paused for a moment. Then he said, "Meredith's not the only one I'm having trouble reaching, Debbie. I think you tune me out. Sharing my life and my thoughts with you is important, but a lot of the time it feels like you're on autopilot. You may think you're hearing me, but you're not, not really." I was squirming inside, but the 90 seconds was not done. He continued, his eyes locked in mine. By the way, listen to me, you're not really communicating with somebody unless you're looking them in the eyes. The eyes are the windows to the soul. You make sure when you're correcting your children, when you're communicating with your husband, when you're loving your husband and your children and your wife, you look them in the eyes. He said, I want us to do better with Meredith and with each other. Maybe I can go jogging with her or give her some pointers to help her get more comfortable with PE. As for you and me, Debbie. And the speaker said, time, switch. And I took a deep breath. Alan, you're right. I get so busy with all the things I'm doing that even though I think I'm listening, I'm not always concentrating. I care about you, your work, all the what you're thinking about, even the details. I know you care about me. Maybe we all need to try something different with each other, something more like what we're doing right now. And the speaker said, time. And my husband and I stared at each other for a moment, stunned at what had just happened. We both said what was on our minds without distraction or interruption. And we both listened to the other person. And the leader said, communication is more than just information. You can clear up many misunderstandings in the office and at home just by taking the time to listen carefully. That exercise took all of 3 minutes, but I think you'll all agree it was a good use of time. And driving back home, my husband and I were determined to put some new rules into practice. No TV in the background. Folks, hey, when you come to the table, leave that thing somewhere else. You say it might ring. Okay. You know, you can't always answer the phone. Pastor, you called me this morning. I was in a meeting and I wanted to answer, but I couldn't answer. You know, and you just can't always do it. And you know what? You leave that thing, you turn the TV off, and you look at each other around the table, and you communicate. And they said, when somebody's talking, make a point to really listen to them. Do you really look that other person in the eyes and really listen to them? And she said, I was saying my prayers that night. I threw in a P.S. Thank you, God, for always being willing to listen to me. Aren't you glad that he does? Now, you know, I think about how a lady wrote that story. And the truth is this, men have more problems communicating than ladies do, generally speaking. But a man would have probably never written that story. Men are too proud. It probably took a lady to actually write that story. You don't stop communicating. I'll throw up a picture, but there's one right there. See that? See that exit sign? The door that is marked communication. It has to be deliberately propped open. It has an automatic closer on it that is marked T-I-M-E, time. If you let enough time pass, then the door of communication will gradually, completely close all the way by itself. And you will no longer be close to that other person because without communication, without communication, there is no closeness. Communication is what makes you close to other people. You look them in the eye, you listen to them, you smile at them, you talk to them, they listen to you, and it makes your relationship feel like a relationship and puts joy in your relationship. Look at this verse. Let your speech be with grace, seasoned with salt. And then here's another one. Husbands, or wives be in subjection to your husband, that if any obey not the word, they may without the word be won by the conversation of the wives while they behold your chaste conversation coupled with fear. And a writer said this, listen to this. Men have a tendency to speak in a demeaning way to their wives rather than a loving, considerate way. We men say what we think. Thus, for the most part, we say dumb things. Men are so regimented that we say what seems to be practical, but it's not usually tactful. Women are different in that they will say the right things, but in a sarcastic sometimes hateful way, and it doesn't take many years or months of this kind of communication before one or both decide that the path of least resistance is to refrain from any serious form of communication altogether. I love this cartoon. Look at this cartoon, all right? You got this little old lady. She's looking around the husband. It's a non-sequitur cartoon. He's sitting there with a newspaper and a TV in front of him. And she says, and this is called Miranda's warning. You have the right to put down the paper, turn off the TV, engage in conversation, and if you refuse this right, everything you don't say will be held against you for the rest of your miserable life. Our ministry began, and is still a key part of our ministry, helping parents understand what they need to do to reach rebellious young people. And many times, we've counseled with the parents of a rebellious teen or a young adult, and they've had to cut him off from his younger siblings to keep him from destroying their lives. But I say to those parents, you continue to visit him, write him, call him every chance you can. You keep the lines of communication open. Why? Because the road of communication is the road that you keep open, that you do not allow to close, is the road that he has to take to come back to God and to come back to you. Somebody said, read it off the screen, everybody, would you? If you... Because it's really easy to forget. And so if you've got a child that's gone the wrong direction, you don't stop communication. You communicate more. You might not be able to bring him into your home to live. It could be that they're doing stupid stuff. Maybe they're on drugs or alcohol or whatever it might be. But you can at least try to communicate with them, tell them that you love them, write them, and text them, and maybe say, hey, can you go to lunch tomorrow? I'd love to take you to lunch tomorrow. After a divorce, a teenage daughter became increasingly rebellious, and it culminated late one night when the police called to tell her she had to come to the police station to pick up her daughter who had been arrested for drunk driving. They didn't speak until the next afternoon, and the mom broke the tension by giving her daughter a small gift wrap box. The daughter nonchalantly opened it and found a little rock inside. She rolled her eyes. Cute, Mom, what's this for? And Mom said, here's the card. The daughter took the card out of the envelope and read it. Tears started trickling down her cheeks. She got up, gave her mom a big hug as the card fell to the floor. And on the card were these words, this rock is more than 6,000 years old. And that's how long it's going to take before I give up on you. I talked to some parents who had a problem with a 16-year-old second-born daughter. They allowed her to go to lost grandparents' home for 2 weeks who mocked the beliefs and standards of the parents. And I said to them, you can't do that again, but you must try to not shut those grandparents out. You don't stop communicating. You try to keep the lines of communication open with those grandparents. They're your grandparents. They are meant by God for you to have a relationship with them. I'm thinking right now of a family in Pennsylvania that had a rebellious 17-year-old son who went to live with his grandparents for a year. Well, in that year's time, the boy got worse. And it reached the point where they had virtually no contact with the boy. They tried to call him. He wouldn't take their calls. They tried to text him. He wouldn't return the text. They tried to email him. Nothing would work. And they said, he's 17 years old. We can't bring him back home. He's toxic. He's poisoned our home. He won't respond to anything we do. What do we do? And we said, send him a postcard every day or every other day. Not a letter. If you send a letter, somebody has to open it. And He may not open it. He may throw it. He may see it's from you and throw it away. The advantage of a postcard is that he can't throw it away without reading it first. And it is keeping the lines of communication open. And you just keep sending that postcard. Why do you do that? Because you don't stop communicating. You have to keep communicating. I'm thinking of another family that had a rebellious older teenager. And they were really trying to reach him. And the father had a real problem with anger. And he knew he had a problem with anger. And he was watching my anger DVDs. I've got a set of the anger DVDs on the table back there. Listen to me. If you have an anger problem, a marriage problem, if you don't fix the anger problem, you can't fix the marriage problem. If you have an anger problem, a parenting problem, if you don't fix the anger problem, you can't fix the parenting problem. And what we found out works is when people have an anger problem, if they get my anger DVDs and the whole family will sit down and watch one of those and watch one a week, put it on the calendar. You don't get things done if they're not on the calendar. Excuse me. You watch one a week. It'll take you 10 weeks to get through it. Then you start all over again. Watch 10 DVDs for the next 10 weeks. 20 weeks time, the whole family's watching it. And the water of the Word of God will gradually wash the anger out of the family's life. Then you can watch one a month after that to keep the anger out. But this man was watching my anger DVDs. He was still struggling with the anger. We told him he should start over again, watch them every day or every other day with the family until he really got victory over his anger. But the anger had virtually destroyed the relationship between him and his older teenage son. Parents, you have to get anger out of your life. You cannot parent. You cannot have godly children that have your heart and that you can turn them the right direction if you have anger in your life. So, we said this to him. The anger had virtually destroyed the relationship with his older teenage son. We told him, take a piece of wrapped candy, unwrap the candy, put a little note inside that says, please forgive me for my anger. Close it, put it on the dresser. The next day, another piece of candy and it says, I love you, son. The next day, can you please forgive me, son? I miss the close fellowship, son. Your mom and I really care about you. The next day, I'm trying to change and please pray for me. The next day, I'm praying for you lots. I love you so much. Now, you know what that boy did? That boy kept every single one of those notes. You know why? Because even a rebel hungers for the acceptance and praise of his father, and it is built into human life by the creator of human life himself for a child to want to have a relationship with his father. One day, time passed, the son decided, maybe I can communicate with my dad and tell him where and when and how he lost my heart. So the son said to his dad, Dad, would you like to know where and how you lost my heart? And the dad said, yes, son, I would. And the son said, Dad, do you remember this particular time? And this, and what happened there? And the dad said, son, that is not the way it was. Here is what really happened. You don't even have that straight in your mind. And the son went to his room and threw every one of those notes in the trash can. Anger cuts off communication. Anger destroys communication. You cannot let anger get in your life and stay in your life. It will destroy communication and you don't want to stop communicating. Read it, please, everybody. Don't stop communicating. You've got to keep communicating. A lady wrote me a while back. I won't read the whole letter. She said this. A lady I know is 20 years old and unmarried. She is dressing inappropriately. She's speaking to ungodly people. She has told countless lies. And her brothers now have decided to not have a relationship with her outside of hello and goodbye. And when she asked for scripture to support it, she gave these scriptures. Listen to these. 1 Corinthians 5:11. I've written unto you not to keep company. If any man that is called a brother be a fornicator or covetous, idolater, railer, drunkard, extortion with such an one, no, not to eat. But wait a minute. Put that in the context. That was written to people in the church about that man who was living in terrible immorality. He was leaven to them. He was pulling them down. If there are people spiritually strong enough, they need to keep communicating with somebody as much as they possibly can. In fact, if somebody had not communicated with him in some way, the repentance that you read that came in 2 Corinthians would not have happened. They sent 2 Corinthians 6:14, "Be ye not unequally yoked together with unbelievers." But wait a minute. This is not a yoke for them to be tied in with her doing the ungodly things she's doing. It's just a matter of reaching out and loving her. They gave 2 Thessalonians 3:14, "If any obey not our word by this epistle, note that man, have no company with him that he may be ashamed." Again, put it in the context. It was lazy people who were mooching off of people in the church. Stronger Christians still should love and reach out to those people. Weak people have to be protected. Stronger Christians must do their best to continue to communicate as much as they possibly can. And this lady wrote and she said, she's told me she feels very unloved and rejected by her brother's treatment because they've cut her off completely. And they've tried to justify what they've done in cutting her off completely, but the truth is they really should continue to do their best to reach out to her and love her and try to bring her back to Christ unless she's actually damaging them and their walk with the Lord in some way or other, in which case she is leaven to them, then they would have to stop the communication. But if not, she needs somebody to reach out to her and love her. Years ago, I was speaking at a camp in Iowa. And there was a boy at the camp by the name of Keith. He was, I don't know, 12, 13 years of age. And at first it was okay. He would come up, shake my hand, stand there and talk to me. And then, frankly, he turned himself into a pest. Everywhere I went, Keith is standing right there. I mean, they'd have handshaking time. Keith is right in my face. After the service, Keith is right there. In the dining hall, Keith is right there. Outdoor activities, I'm standing talking to some other preachers. Keith comes barging right in. And I was just ready to tell Keith that he was driving me crazy. And I thought this thought. I wonder if Keith has a daddy. I sat down to eat a meal. Here comes Keith. Sitting right there. I looked at him and said, "Keith, you live with your folks?" He said, "Well, sort of. I live with my mom." And then it poured out. "See, my real dad, my mom wouldn't marry him because he wouldn't keep a job. And my stepdad, my mom divorced him because they couldn't get along and he wouldn't work. And my mom has a boyfriend now, but I don't know about him." And I thought, what if I had cut Keith off? And it's just a boy looking for a father figure. That's all it was. He looked at me and he thought, he seems like the kind of man who'd be a father figure. And he didn't even process all that. It's just happening. And I thought, oh God, thank you for not letting me cut Keith off. Read it out loud, everybody, would you please? Oh ye, our heart is enlarged. You ready? We're going to do it one more time. Everybody, come on, come on. Open mouth, enlarged heart. Come on, come on, come on. Y'all still look ridiculous. But you'll remember it, won't you? The open mouth, the enlarged heart. When I was here 2 years ago, I think I gave the kindness message. Did I give the message on the life-transforming power of kindness? Anyway, I've given that lots of places. And in that message, I tell this story. There was a lady When I first became a pastor in Lincoln, Illinois in 1975, I got a terrible telephone call one day that this lady, her 16-year-old teenage daughter had just been killed in an automobile accident. This was a single mother. Her daughter was her whole life. I had to notify the lady. I had to preach the funeral. And after the funeral was over, I went to visit with the lady. And she was so angry and bitter and harsh that I thought, she doesn't want me around. I'm not going back to see her. And so I didn't. 2 years went by. And one day I was just out going door to door, knocking on doors. We're not pastoring a massive town, of 15, 16,000 people. And I was shocked. She answered the door of the house I knocked on. And we stood there and chatted for just a little bit. Then I recognized who she was, and then she leveled both barrels at me and let me have it. She said, "You don't care anything about me. If you'd have cared about me, you would have come to see me after my daughter died. You don't care." I tried to tell her I did care. I couldn't tell her she was so angry, bitter, and harsh that I didn't come back because I didn't want to put up with it. Finally, I looked at her and I said, "Marcia, I'm going to prove to you that I do care. I'm going to keep coming to see you and you will know that I care." For the next 35 years, there was nobody in the city of Lincoln, Illinois that my wife and I visited as much as we did Marcia. About once every 2 months, we went to see her. Over and over and over again, we went to her house. After about 30 years, Marcia came to our church one time in all that time. She couldn't stand to come to our church because it brought back memories of her daughter who had been in our church. She just couldn't stand it. And we're about 30 years, and one day I knocked on her door. She came to the door of her house. My wife and I are standing there together. She had the biggest smile I ever saw her have on her face. She said, "Pastor Davis, Ray Jean, y'all come on in. I've got wonderful news to tell you." And when we sat down, she said, "Last Sunday, I went to Latham Baptist Church over in Latham, Illinois, and I got saved over there last Sunday. And we just rejoiced with her. It was wonderful." A couple of weeks later, we went back, knocked on her door. "Last Sunday, I went to Latham Baptist Church. I got baptized." We said, "Wonderful." And you know what? It was fine. She's a member of another church now. It don't matter. There's a sense in which she's just ours. You know, it don't matter where she goes to church. This is different than anything. We just kept going back. One day we were visiting with her, and she looked at us and she said, "Pastor Davis, I don't really have any family." She said, "I've decided that I'm leaving everything I have to your church." And about 2 years after I stepped down as pastor, I stepped down in 2011, 2013, our church received, Marcia died. Marcia died. I was away from home traveling and missed her funeral. I felt terrible about it. I have been near the cemetery. I can't seem to find the grave, but I've been in that area. I know where she's, generally speaking, where she's buried. But anyway, and a few months later, our church received a check in the mail for almost $40,000. I didn't realize Marcia did not need the absence of my presence. She needed the presence of my kindness, my communication. Even if she was so angry and bitter and harsh, she just needed somebody to reach out and love her. And you know what? There's somebody out there. Is your heart big enough to take that person in? That family member that attacks you, criticizes you, that hurts you, your heart bleeds. Is your heart big enough to reach out to them and love them and say, you know what? I'm going to try. I've preached this message now enough times. I've got some testimonies from it where people say, you know what? It was hard. But when I left the service that night, I called that person. Or I texted them, or I emailed them, and I said, you know what? I'd just love to see you. What are the three words? Say it, please, everybody. Don't stop communicating. The open mouth, the enlarged heart. Yeah, there you go. Is your heart big enough to take in those that it's difficult to love? Come Sunday, is your church, can you enlarge your heart enough? You want your church to grow? You do, don't you? There's all kinds of things you can say about it. That person who comes walking in here who doesn't look like somebody you might want in your church. You know what I mean? Can you love them too? Can you give them time to grow? Would you bow with me, please?